we present the news quiz with your chairman, Simon Hoggart.
Hello and welcome again to the news quiz. We start the new series with a cutting seen in the Louth Leader, read by Harriet Cass.
A 64-year-old widow who accidentally put her deceased husband Dennis's ashes out for the dustman resolved to become reunited with them and to search through hundreds of tons of rubbish. "I'd recognise him straight away," she said. "He was in a green Bernardo's plastic bag."
Thanks to Jane and Adrian Rogers for that. Let's meet the teams. Please welcome first on my right, Andy Hamilton and Chris Addison. Opposite them on my left, Alan Corran and Brian Sewell. Andy, the first question of the new series. Who's sorry now? Possibly.
Well, this is obviously this is a question about the Labour conference in Brighton, where there was the most extraordinary breakdown of vetting procedures that caused all that shouting and heckling. I mean, and when you think about it, I mean, how can someone get into a Labour conference by posing as a Labour supporter? And even more amazing, how can that person manage to become party leader? I thought his speech was quite good. I'm in a position to judge his speech, I think, because I was one of those waverers who, around the time, during the build-up to the Iraq War, wasn't sure, and then when all the stuff about 45 minutes from doom came out, I thought, well, obviously the government know a lot of secret stuff that we don't, and I fell for it. And the result is it's rather changed my attitude to Tony Blair now. I think my attitude is a bit like, you remember Tom and Jerry? I think I'm like Tom, the naive cat now. You know, I'm not prepared to follow him round any blind corners anymore, because I know I'm going to end up with a face in the shape of a shovel.
Andy, that was a wonderful conference speech by Andy, but he hasn't actually answered the question, which is that war means never having to say you're sorry.
I thought the most chilling sentence was, "I only know what I believe." Which, on that basis, that's the political philosophy of David Icke, isn't it?
It's Tony Blair, whose speech on Tuesday contained what might have been an apology for all those non-existent weapons of mass destruction. With Mr. Blair finally admitting that no WMDs will ever be found in Iraq, we now know that the only thing capable of bringing Britain to its knees in 45 minutes is the new extended edition of Countdown. Mr. Blair said he could go on to win a third term, which can sit nicely alongside the other two terms for him, which are lying and bastard. Two points to Andy. Chris, what carry-on led to a lot of beating about the bush?
Well, this is a slightly difficult question to answer because this is a question about the first presidential debate in America between George Bush, the incumbent... It's so difficult not to put patent in there, isn't it? The incumbent and... John Kerry. It's difficult to answer because of the way that we record this programme, which is on a Thursday. It goes out on a Friday and a Saturday, but it's recorded on a Thursday, which means that the presidential debate hasn't happened yet. So, can I make it clear at this stage that if Kerry does come through and win this debate, as everybody hopes, then I've always said that he was the man for the job, and I've always believed that he should be on the ticket. Can I make it equally clear that if he muffs it up... I've always thought that he was rubbish and no idea what the Democrats were thinking there. It's extraordinary. So they're holding this first debate. It's in Florida that they're holding it, which is an extraordinary place to hold a debate at the moment because it's basically going to be 90 minutes of people going, "I can't hear you. It's a bit windy." They're holding it in Florida, I think, because that means that if Kerry wins the debate, George Bush still gets to win. Nothing deserves a round of applause like a four-year-old topical reference. And
now you've blown the whistle on the fact that it's Thursday. I watched the news before I came here. They were adjusting the two podia, as Brian would say, because of the difference in height. Wouldn't you? Because what we've actually got is Bonzo and Lurch. These two very same people. But But Bush mustn't look shorter than Kerry. But the podium mustn't look as though it's been fiddled with. And I said, these two blokes are raising and lowering this thing, and they're going to do it with lighting, so that Bush looks as tall as Kerry.
If they do end up stacking George Bush a bit higher, the temptation just to walk across and push him off and go, there you are.
Thursday night saw the first debate between George Bush and John Kerry, broadcast live on American TV. It's thought to be the most important debate since John F. Kennedy and Richard Nixon squared off in 1960. Though actually there's no similarity at all. I mean, Kennedy was a war veteran and Nixon was a corrupt, chimp-faced, lying alcoholic. 2 points to Chris. Brian, why will David Blunkett be giving criminals something for the weekend?
Oh, yes, David Blunkett. I thought you might ask a question about David Blunkett. I woke at 4 o'clock this morning trying to remember his name. I reached the age where I forget people's names. Blunkett. Anyway, what's... I've forgotten the question. Oh, yes. Weekends. He's got an absolutely wonderful alternative to the Territorial Army. It is that criminals who are not criminals because of any sexual offence or any drug offence or any serious violence or anything like that can go to jail at weekends and go to their ordinary place of business during the week. It's so that they won't lose their jobs and won't become detached from their families. It's all very compassionate. It separates them, of course, at weekends, for which most husbands would be mightily glad. So, he doesn't have to take his wife to the local supermarket. Prison is obviously infinitely better than the local superstore.
Do you have a favourite supermarket, Brian? Is it Waitrose?
I have an unfavourite supermarket. It's called the Sainsbury's Saver Centre. Collier's Wood, I think.
That's horrible. I'd rather be in prison.
It's very good for dog food.
In his speech to the Labour Party conference, the Home Secretary announced plans for weekend jail sentences to help criminals hold on to their jobs. Mr Blunkett was slightly thrown during his speech when his pledge to speed up the eviction of nuisance neighbours was greeted by a whoop of joy from Gordon Brown. Alan, listen to this. Dame Virulin with Toxic. Alan, which toxic nuclear shipment has failed to get a glowing report from Channel Islanders?
Oh, this is the flotilla, which is going from America to France with waste from enriched plutonium. And there's a great fear that there will be a collision in the Channel. And all this stuff will be washed ashore in Hastings and ruin those fine people that... crouch on the beach trying to keep aliens out.
The papers are always saying this kind of thing. This is a disgrace. They've been sending these these nuclear loads in these terrible old ships. What if terrorists would find out? What if terrorists found out about this? How would they find out? Well, they might read these... Oh, I see.
But I thought all this stuff was going to Hartlepool.
What? That was just wishful thinking, I think.
Two ships carrying weapons-grade plutonium from the United States to be converted into fuel in France are passing through the English Channel this week. The shipment contains 140 kilos of weapons-grade plutonium, enough to make 40 nuclear bombs or an entire gallon of Sunny Delight.
So I feel like a judge. Don't record this or anything. I mean, what is Sunny Delight?
I wanted to ask what Countdown is.
Can somebody please come round with the pills?
We start round two with a cutting from the Daily Mail.
Ramirez Hidalgo played well against Henman. exceedingly so, given that this was his first ever match on grass, and that he had to work out how to deal with balls bouncing around his ankles.
Thanks to Steve Murrett from Longworth in Oxfordshire for that. Andy, why is it chocks away?
This is about those very, very responsible chocolate manufacturers. They've decided that they have to reduce the size of their super jumbo chocolate bars. Partly, it's a lot of lawsuits, hernias, things like that. They're pretending that it's in response to the concern about the nation being obese. But I watched their spokesman, and he clearly, what he said they're going to do is they're going to replace the jumbo-sized chocolate bars with two smaller chocolate bars in the same packet that, he said rather sweetly, are designed not to be consumed all at once and for sharing.
Medically, they've got it all wrong, because if you really want to eat chocolate and not get fat, you should sort of glut on it. You should eat a couple of pounds of chocolate in one evening, and then don't eat any more for a week or two. And the body says, oh my God, what is happening to me? And immediately sort of pushes the whole thing through without taking any of that. No, seriously, if you can bring yourself to go without chocolate for a month, then eat a month's supply of Mars bars or whatever it happens to be all at once in one evening. And it will do you virtually no harm.
Isn't that,
it might make you sick.
Isn't that what's called an eating disorder, Brian?
It's extraordinary.
It works with oysters.
I want to, as it were, get to the bottom of this. What do you mean it works with oysters?
If you want to control your cholesterol level and therefore shouldn't eat oysters, but you feel compelled to eat oysters, do so once a month and have at least a couple of dozen.
While you're here, would you mind having a look at my knee?
Sweet manufacturers Mars and Cadbury have announced that they're to phase out king-sized chocolate bars as part of a campaign against obesity. It turns out that a single king-sized Snickers bar contains more calories than a steak and two veg supper. So, 60p, it's quite a bargain. Chris, whose corrective eye surgery didn't stop him making a spectacle of himself?
Jack Straw got himself in trouble this week after taking his glasses off, finally, by, at the opening of the United Nations, or as it's been renamed, the Busted Flush, he shook Robert Mugabe's hand, and this caused outrage, and then he compounded his sin by offering as an explanation that it was dark in the corner where Mr. Mugabe was sitting, and therefore he didn't recognise him. It's unbelievable. It says how much people think about Robert Mugabe that you're prepared to appear to be racist rather than shake his hand.
It's not the first case I've heard of someone not knowing who they're being introduced to, they're talking to. Because a friend of mine worked in the civil service, and he was invited to a garden party at number 10 Downing Street. It was a lovely sunny day, and he was standing there. He could hear Mrs. Thatcher, the Prime Minister then, talking behind him, and she was talking to somebody about Japan was making overtures about being allowed to join NATO at the time so that they could acquire, you know, an army and a navy, which they weren't, I think, allowed to do under the terms of the treaty at the end of the Second World War. And he could hear Mrs. Thatcher saying, well, I'm against it, you know, because, I mean, you can't trust the Japanese, because you only have to look at the terrible atrocities, and they're warlike people. Look what they did during the war. And he turned around to see that Mrs. Thatcher was talking to the German ambassador. who apparently just said, yes, quite.
Foreign Secretary Jack Straw was caught on camera this week shaking hands with the President of Zimbabwe, Robert Mugabe. On the footage, Mr. Straw is seen reaching out his hand to the evil tyrant, saying, nice to see you, nice to see you. So not only does he have failings as a Foreign Secretary, but his Bruce Forsyth impersonation is pretty awful too. Brian, listen to this.
La main, au ciel d'été confond ses blancs moutons avec les anges si purs, la mer.
Brian, who's having la mer of a week?
It must be P&O at Portsmouth.
Mm-hmm.
And the general desertion of Portsmouth by P&O, 1,200 people losing their jobs, and nobody can go to Cherbourg or Brittany or anywhere from, well, at least on a P&O liner, because they've lost 25 million quid in the first 6 months or something like that for this year. So there's no profit anymore in crossing the channel in a boat. And the answer has been not only to cut the services from Portsmouth, which rather sinks that miserable city. it is, I think, it rivals Luton.
Brian, is there anywhere you can go these days?
I'm not. Luton at least has a university, mind you, it doesn't have any students. They have decided that the answer to losing money on ferries is actually to make it a sort of Fortnum and Mason experience for an hour and 45 minutes. They're going to have wildly expensive shops for the upper classes and make us feel... sorry, I shouldn't have said us. make them feel wanted and at home. Seems a perfectly lousy idea to me. I think the only way to get across the channel is as quickly as possible and as cheaply as possible. They ought to strip everything out, chuck it in the Thames and send us over in open boats.
P&O Ferries has announced the closure of three cross-channel ferry routes in an effort to restore its financial fortunes after notching up losses of £40 million last year. Most people in Portsmouth were surprised to discover that the ferries went to France, as they previously thought that if they sailed past the Isle of Wight, they would fall off the edge of the earth. Alan, why could Postman Pat be swapping his black and white cat for a panda?
It's funny to think that if Postman Pat had had a black and white dog, the whole history of poetry might have been different. This is about constabularies. They're shutting down all the village post offices in England, as a result of which, having converted them to constabularies, they're going to be shutting down the constabularies as well. So there aren't any police in the country at all, but they're going to be sub-postmistresses. Sub-postmistresses. I can't say mistresses. It would come as some relief to my wife. Sub-postmistresses and sub-postmasters, but now they're going to be policemen as well. They're going to have helmets and be shot.
You go in and report a crime and you have to hope that the crime that you see is not on a Wednesday afternoon or at the weekend or pension day because the queues are far too big. And then you can go in and report crimes such as the post office being held up. And you stand there corralled by that rope and wait till it says, desk sergeant number 8, please.
Post offices in 8 rural towns and villages are to stand in for local police stations in a pilot scheme running in Norfolk. Spokesman for Norfolk Police said post office staff would not have to deal with anything they felt uncomfortable with, such as delivering letters. And before we start the final round, here's an item from the Eastern Daily Press.
Lingering hopes that job losses might be averted at a Turkish delight factory in Thetford have been dashed after it was announced that production had been moved to Turkey.
Thanks to Miss Bluebell Garmy from Wroxham for that. Andy, listen to this.
Pillow talk, pillow talk. Another night of being alone with pillow talk. When it's all said and done, two heads together can be better than one. That's what they say.
Why are Japanese ladies, Andy, talking about their pillows?
There's a product out in Japan which is a man-shaped pillow. It's a pillow for women who are on their own but feeling a bit vulnerable and a bit that they can cuddle up to this man-shaped pillow. I don't know how man-shaped the pillow is. They're also talking about bringing out a woman-shaped pillow for men. I think those are available on the market, but they're not called that.
Are there inflatable men? I've often wondered. I mean, can you go into Ann Summers and get an inflatable bloke? And if so, how hard do you have to puff in order to get... I mean, is it like... You know how it is with a balloon when you're blowing it up for a kid's party? You can never quite get the little tit off the end to get... I mean, it's always the furthest extremity of anything inflatable, which is the hardest bit to get to. But how hard will they have to blow in order to get a satisfactory inflatable man, is my question.
The Japanese have invented the boyfriend pillow, a man-shaped pillow for lonely Japanese women to cuddle up to at night. The boyfriend pillow is described as soft, pliable, and has no spine. So recreating the experience Sherry Blair has almost every night... Chris, which maritime Mounties are getting that sinking feeling?
Is this the Canada thing? Right. Evidently, the Canadian Navy don't have enough money to build their own submarines. So what they did was they bought some second-hand submarines off us. And we stiffed them. Because they bought three submarines off us, and now they're complaining that they're leaking. That's the first complaint. And there was a complaint that... they're rusty, to which the British spokesman replied, well, they've been in the water. If you don't want them to go rusty, don't put them in the water, man. It's strangest terms that they put this in. They said there was a dent the size of a large pizza in the side of one of these, as though that's a military way of measuring things. But it blasted a hole in the hole the size of a suckling pig. I've never seen it. Foodstuff-based measuring system. They didn't say whether it was thin crust or deep pan, so it's uncertain how much damage was actually done. They are furious that they spent £250 million, and we won't give them their money back. I don't know why you'd buy... I think they must have bought them sight unseen.
Did we sell them to them on eBay?
Well, this is it, isn't it? we have got a terrible eBay rating.
I don't know why they need them. I mean, I can't think of anybody unimaginative enough to be an enemy of Canada.
The Canadian Navy are looking for compensation after the four second-hand submarines they bought from the British government developed serious faults. A Ministry of Defence spokesman said it's all the Canadian government's fault for not shelling out the extra $15.99 for the extended warranty. Alan, whose latest travel plans are out of this world?
This is Branson. I hate people who use boldly go. Every newspaper had, and they either had Houston, we have a problem because his trains didn't turn up, or Richard Branson boldly goes. It was one of those mornings when he wanted to go in to the subs room on any newspaper with a Kalashnikov and kill them all. Anyway, Richard Branson has put £13 million into a rocket which has a little rocket underneath it, rather like a kangaroo, and then fires it into space with five people on it who are stupid enough to have paid 115,000 quid for the privilege. If you actually had the money to go, you'd be with these four other terrible people, weightless, and all their Rolexes and their neck medallions and blood would be circling around. It'd be the most awful people in the world. You wouldn't want to bring them back.
Imagine being weightless with Tracy Emin.
There'd be a lot of nasty stuff going past, yeah.
I love Branson for the fact that he's like a drunk making claims. It's just nobody's called him on them yet. I think he's just kind of waiting for us to say, yes, you can't do that, Richard. It's not possible. Because, you know, he just said, all right, I'm going to fix the trains. I'm going to fix the trains. And nobody says anything. We just let him get on with not managing. All right, then I'm going to space. I'm going to go to space. And nobody said anything about it. He said, right, I'm going to eat a walrus on live television in 30 minutes and it'll all be gone. I swear, I'm going to invent four new types of water, all called Karen. Come on. I'm starting at some point. I'm crazy.
Sir Richard Branson says he'll send tourists into space by the year 2007. He said he would be one of the first passengers on board the new spaceships, which has delighted rail passengers who've wanted to put a rocket under him for a very long time. Before we reveal the final scores, let's hear the cuttings the teams have brought along. Andy.
Well, this is from The Telegraph. thieves broke into Business Homes' new business park in Wakefield last week and stole the 60 cameras and sensors that made up its state-of-the-art security system. This was a seriously sophisticated system, insists Director Simon Halston, prompting me to ask how the burglars did away with it. He said, there are cameras hooked up to a central office in Blackburn. If the men watching the screen see a burglar, they send a message out on loudspeakers to the office, warning the burglars to leave. Unfortunately, in this case, the thieves just didn't listen. One other person did, though. The old lady next door later told us she'd heard the voice of God last night. Telling her in a strong Lancashire accent to leave the vicinity as soon as possible.
This is from The Times on the 26th of May. It was sent by Jill and Eddie Hathaway. It says, a spraying programme to eliminate the notorious Blandford fly in Dorset has been scrapped. The insect bit 1,400 people in 1989, but the project has been dropped as there were only two attacks last year. People near the River Stour were advised to wear trousers for the next 2 weeks just in case.
Brian.
This is from The Independent this past Monday. It was an article on circumcision, at the bottom of which there was a panel saying 10 facts you should know. And fact two is this. Infant foreskins are in great demand among biomedical industries. They are used to make insulin and artificial skin. The foreskin of one single infant can be persuaded to expand to 250,000 square feet.
Make a very nice wedding marquee, wouldn't it? Alan.
It was an interview with Sharon Stone in the Sunday Times a couple of weeks ago that I spotted. It says, the scene that turned Sharon Stone into a household name shows her in the police interrogation room, defending herself before somewhat nervous officers. She says that the famous move, crisscrossing her legs to show she had no underwear on, was to throw the detectives off the scent.
Thank you all. Let's look at the final score, and appropriately enough for our first show, everybody is equal with 16 points. And before we leave you, here's a correction from the Sunday Telegraph.
Your correspondent is wrong to suggest that a Victorian Mr. Coffin named his daughter Pine. The West Country Coffins go back to 1087, and a Pine married into the family in the 1700s. Yours sincerely, Susan Pine Coffin.
With that, thank you. Goodbye.
Taking part in the news quiz were Andy Hamilton, Chris Addison, Brian Sewell and Alan Corrin. The chairman was Simon Hoggart and the news was read by me, Harriet Cass. The chairman's script was written by Lucy Clark, Simon Littlefield and George Poles. The panellists' WMDs were supplied by Kenneth Trouser and the producer was Simon Nichols.